Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Conrad Sewell is an Australian singer and songwriter. With over 1 billion streams on Firestone on Spotify alone, there's no doubt Conrad's hit with Kygo captured music lovers the world over and cemented his place in global superstardom. Conrad's musical journey began much earlier, singing, writing and shopping demos from as early as 8 years old. Before picking up an ARIA Award for Song of the Year with his single Start Again, in 2015, also nominated for Breakthrough Artist and Best Pop Release that year. His 2018 single, Healing Hands, went triple platinum and was nominated for Song of the Year at the ARIAs. And 2019 saw Conrad release his debut album, Life, to critical acclaim. In 2025 is the 10-year anniversary of the hit single, Firestone. And to commemorate this, Conrad will be going on an acoustic sessions tour of Australia. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Conrad Sewell. So where in the world are you and how are you doing?
I'm doing very well. I just arrived back in Brisbane, Australia, my hometown. I was in Las Vegas last week and Oklahoma and LA. So I'm just getting over a little bit of jet lag, but I am home now and thrusting right back into Australian life and getting organized for this regional tour.
And any interesting stories that happened to you while you were on in Las Vegas and this little trip that you're on?
None that I can tell to the world, but but yes, it was I was playing over there playing a big rugby league game. I did the halftime show and, you know, normal Vegas nonsense, you know, 4 days of going too hard, playing in the Devil's Playground. I went to Tulsa, Oklahoma, and worked with my friend Taylor Hansen from the band Hansen after that, which was lovely. And then just went back to LA and hung out for a few days and then back home.
Let's rewind. At what age, whether as a child or teenager, did you feel cool? I want to be in the creative space, so I want to be in this world. And how did that journey progress?
I mean, I always loved music. I wanted to be a singer, you know, or famous from a very early age. I don't know whether that just came from a deep insecurity or what, but I think maybe about 14, 15 was when it was like I started to really take hold of me and I really wanted to. I was fascinated by the business. I was fascinated about how records were made and songwriting, and it was just became more of, I really then knew that this was the only thing I ever wanted to do, kind of thing.
Understanding that, how did that progress to allow it to become professional?
I just started hustling. You know, I started sending out demos at a very early age. I met a publisher who was based in Sweden, and at 16, I sent him some music, and he put me on a plane to go to Sweden and you know, learn sort of more about writing songs and, you know, started a band, and my band at 17 got signed to Universal out of Germany. And, you know, then we ended up on tour with Avril Lavigne and Simple Plan and bands like that. And, you know, so it's just like one door opens another, a couple more slam in your face, and then another one opens. And then you just sort of like, you know, things just start happening. But it was always like I just had this unwavering, there was no doubt that something was going to happen. And every time I thought, every time it would get down and be like, oh, this, you know, something bad, something wouldn't go our way or my way, something else would happen that made that sort of reaffirmed the fact that I was on the right track. So, you know, it's just, it's one of, like anything in life, you know what I mean? Like the things that sometimes feel like a negative at the time, you know, end up being positives.
How long were you in that band together for, and when did you move solo?
I was in the band from 17 to 25.
What was the difference for you between being in a band and going solo?
Just more pressure, less people to enjoy it with. You know, the guys in my band were my best mates, and like it just felt like everything we did was you know, just for fun, you know what I mean? Like, whereas when you saw, when we were, when I went solo, everything felt a lot more important. Everything felt a lot more, there was a lot more pressure, a lot more insecurity around the fact that my name was going to be lit up in lights, not theirs. But I quickly got used to it. But I it was definitely like at the very beginning, it was like, oh shit, like, you know, is this what I actually want? But, you know, I think it was for the best.
You said earlier that when you were younger, you were, had this fascination of being, in inverted commas, famous and, you know, this world. Are there any aspects of it that you were surprised by that you didn't actually realize, oh, this is actually part of it?
I mean, my level of fame, I don't think I've experienced like a, you know, a Justin Bieber level of fame. So like, I don't know exactly that I'm the right person to answer that question. Okay. I know that the level of fame that I've experienced is never, you know, it's like, be careful what you wish for kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like, I think I'm lucky that I've had enough success where I can still, you know, where I go to the shopping center and I'll get asked for a couple of photos, but I'm not hassled to the point where I can't do my groceries. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
I don't know. I think fame is a funny thing. It's like, I think, you know, people want it because it makes them feel like they're going to be, you know, they're treated differently, or they get, you know, they get pushed to the top of the totem pole kind of thing. But ultimately, I don't think that it leads to happiness. I think it leads to a quite a lonely life.
Your creative process in creating a song from 0 to 3 to 4 minutes of a song, what is that process? Is it easy every time? What motivates it? Do you collaborate with others? How does it work?
I mean, I co-write a lot. Sometimes I write by myself. Sometimes it's easy. Sometimes it's hard. There's not a really straight answer to that question. I would say that when it is easy, it's usually because you know exactly what you're trying to say and what how you want to say it. And it's just real. It's a real emotion you're just trying to put out onto paper. If you're just going in and trying to pull something out of your ass for the sake of writing a pop song, then it can be hard. It can take hours and hours, and you're waiting. You're trying to figure out one line, and it's because the line doesn't mean anything. You know what I mean? But if you come in and you've just had a fight with your girlfriend or your boyfriend or you know, you've just lost someone that you love, the lyric will be written within 20 minutes because you're just telling the truth. And that's, I think, the most rewarding experience, where you get stuff that's really, you know, resonates with the audience, because you're literally just telling a story that of an emotion that we've, you know, most of us have been through.
Yeah, it's about authenticity. I totally agree. You mentioned emotion, so I'm going to dive into this aspect. I'm not sure if you're aware of NLP. NLP is neuro-linguistic programming. So that's the way people process information. Now, part of this, there's sort of a subcategory where we each process information differently. Something kicks in for each of us as a young age, which allows us to have a dominant one, a secondary, and tertiary. Dominant naturally means that we're in it for most of the day. Secondary, couple of hours. Tertiary, half an hour, if at all. You've got three of them. We've got visual people. Now, visual people interpret information through pictures. So as I'm speaking, they'll be creating pictures in their brain of the conversation we're having. Then you've got auditory people. Auditory people hear the word. They put the word into the sentence. They understand the sentence. They put the sentence into the paragraph, and so forth. Kinesthetic people. These people are about emotions, energy, tone of voice. So all those various aspects have to play out of the communication in order for them to process it. Focusing specifically on music, when you're listening to music of your own or of others, are you creating pictures? Is it about the lyrics in the word, or is it about the emotion?
I think I'm definitely not creating pictures. Actually, to be honest, I don't know, man. I think all three. Like, I think a lot of it is about the lyric for me. But I'm a singer, so melody is everything. So when I hear a melody, that's the first thing that I'm drawn to in the song. That will put me in whatever time of year it was that I heard that song, or whatever country it was that I heard that song. That'll immediately take me to that place. I think for me, music's very much like nostalgic in that way. Like, you know, I still listen to a lot of 90s music. I listen to a lot of, like, you know, old music because it reminds me of times in my life. You know, I find it quite hard to find new music now that I love, or that, like, makes me feel the way the music did when I was in my early 20s or in the 90s.
So it sounds like emotion, but you reference feelings. So
there we go.
When you're listening to songs by other artists, are you able to just relax and listen to it for what it is, or is your technical brain unpacking all the time?
If it's really good, no, I just listen to it. If it's average, I'm angry. if it's someone I don't like, then I'm angry or bitter. But if it's great, then I'm just enjoying it. Maybe a little bit like thinking like, oh, who wrote this? Or, you know, like I'm like, you know, those kind of things. Or like I wonder who produced it. Like just my industry brain ticking over. But
yeah. I love me a CD. I still budget for my CDs every month. For me, it's an energy exchange to you guys for all the hard work that you put in. I love the journey of the choice, the unpacking, listening to song from one to whatever number. I'm unsure if you're aware that CDs, vinyls, cassettes, massive comeback. Last year, 5.9 million sales of vinyls in the UK, the biggest since 1990. Also last year, there's a product in the UK of products that they gauge exchanges on. And based on this, they use it for tax purposes. Naturally, there obviously has to be a high exchange for a product to be in this basket. Vinyls have been in it for a longest time. And because of the upsurge of CDs again, CDs are now back in this basket of products. The research is showing that it's the younger teenagers that are diving into this world, not necessarily the older nostalgic people. Then we also have streaming platforms that people consume music on. What are your observations of the landscape?
Oh, man, it's pretty depressing, to be honest. I mean, I don't know. I'm not amazing at, I'm not great with technology, so I don't, but I'm also, you know, I am living in, I do understand that everything is, you know, I'm a, what do you call it? A creature of, you know, I'm on TikTok just as much as the next person kind of thing. So I understand the way, why it's very important to the industry and how it can be used as a tool. My problem is that I fear that the industry is so cluttered with music now because everybody can put out music. There's hundreds of thousands of songs coming out every week. It's very hard to break through the noise, you know what I mean? Where there used to be a set amount of releases and the labels would control it. And I think that, you know, it has a negative and a positive, but you know, like everything, you know what I mean? Like it just means that there's, you know, there's more crap out there, but it also means that, you know, people have more, you know, or more opportunity to get their stuff out there. You know, hopefully the cream of the crop rises to the top, but my fear is that it doesn't.
Totally agree. And what do you enjoy about performing live?
Everything. Absolutely everything. I love entertaining. I love feeling like I have the crowd in the palm of my hand. I love connecting with people and feeling an energy in a room that like it's the only place in the world that matters. And I love hearing, like, you know, after the shows, meeting the fans, hearing how important it is to them, connecting with people. You know, for me, life is about connection, and music is one of the deepest types of connection that you can make with a person. And being able to meet these fans that have supported me over the years and you know, touch them and see that it's real is an incredible feeling.
Okay, so I'm that dude that's right up in front. I'm jamming, I'm dancing. I'll take my cell phone out for maybe one or two videos, one or two photos, then I put it away. I notice a lot of people these days are tweeting or posting or videoing. They're doing a lot of that for a lot of the time. Referencing connection, as you just mentioned, do you not feel that having the phone in their hands or in their front of their faces a lot of time takes away from the connection, or it's just where society is?
I think it's just where society is, but I completely agree at the same time. It does take away from the connection. I think it's more just like people are so worried about what – people are more worried about showing everyone that they were at the concert than they are with actually enjoying the concert. I mean, I'm the same. You know, I went to a Drake concert the other night, and I was more worried about capturing the, you know, the fact that I was at the concert and, like, I had sick, awesome seats than actually just listening to some of my favorite songs. It's just the way we are with society. Everyone's trying to be cool. Everyone's trying to, you know, big note themselves and show everybody where that what they're doing, and it's sad, but it's just it is what it is. I wish it wasn't that way. I wish phones would all just blow up tomorrow.
Yes, sometimes I agree with you.
Yeah, so, seriously.
Naturally, you've been performing live for the longest time. Since you started compared to now, has it gotten easier in the sense that, you know, we always have those butterflies, those nerves? Are there any tricks that you've incorporated in your performance that you allow it to maybe become easier or things to flow better?
I think I'm just I'm a little bit more relaxed in the sense of I'm more comfortable on stage. Obviously, that just comes with experience. But I think that being authentic on stage is where you find the magic. And if you can find a way to put your guard down and to just and to, like I said connect a lot, but like just connect with the audience and sort of open up, I think that it allows for the room to feel more like they really get to know you and you're not just this person up on stage, you know, that they paid money to come and see. If you mix that with it with talent, then people are like, you know, they're blown away and they'll be fans for life. I think there's a, you know, like there's something very appealing to artists that know how to make a crowd feel like they know them. And I think I've learned to do that over the years just by, you know, I find it hard in real life, but when I get on a stage, I find it very easy to be myself or very easy to be honest. Whereas when I'm off stage, I can fucking lie as much as I want to, you know what I mean? But when I'm on stage, I find it very easy to tell the truth.
Okay, interesting. And you've naturally got the upcoming tour that's going to be happening in Australia. What's happening for the period, the rest of the year?
We're going to Europe in June. But yeah, a lot of touring this year. And then there's going to be some new music coming. I'm just trying to put out as much music and tour as much as possible. That's what I want to do.
And hopefully adding South Africa to the tour list soon.
I would love to do that. You know, one of my biggest fans, actually, she's from South Africa, and I often communicate with her. And I love the Saffers, and I really look forward to getting over there and playing for you guys. I know how much you love your music and how much you appreciate it.
Yeah, cool. So when you're here, I'm going to be cheering you on right up in front, not having myself on art for most of the time. We'll go for coffee afterwards.
I love it. That sounds great, man. I'm in.
So, Conrad, I love this game. I know if I had to ask you this question in 2 minutes, 10 years, 5 hours, I know your answer will be different every time. I recognize that and I understand that. I'm not saying favorite. I'm saying top of mind. If you had to push play to five artists once we finish this conversation, who would those artists be? And if you could think of specific songs of those artists, what would those songs be?
Whew. All right. Right now, it would be the song by The Dress by Dijon. Okay. A song called The Dress by Dijon. Stan Fender. The song would be 17. I mean, 17 Going Under is amazing. So I'll say 17 Going Under by Stan Fender. The Killers, When You Were Young, or All These Things I've Done. Probably the new Bruno Mars song, just to fuck shit up a little. Pat Tuesday and Wet. Yeah. It's my gym at the moment. And gosh, probably just the Michael Jackson song because I'm a very, very big fan. And so Michael, I'll go with one of the ballads. Let's do You Are Not Alone by Michael Jackson.
Awesome list. Some of them I need to add to mine. So thank you for the reminders. Conrad, the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say?
I just want to say that I'm very grateful for the last 10 years of support from everybody that's listened to my music. And I hope that I get to do it for, you know, 10, 20 more. And I hope I get to play a show for you guys all so you get to see the real deal.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.